You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast for Wednesday, October 28th, 2020. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com, and today's episode is brought to you by Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. Whether you have two TVs like me, or you just have one TV, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Today we have our weekly mailbag show. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions, I'll get to as many of them as I can. First question comes from Luke. John, isn't it great to be halfway through the season and already thinking about the next year again? The next major date is clearly the trade deadline. I think the two most intriguing names being brought up are Marcus May and Quinnen Williams. And the answer to whether the Jets should trade them or not lies in two different questions. For Williams, it is simply what kind of return in draft capital can you get? May is more complicated. I think the main question is, are you willing to re-sign him and how much is it going to cost? If I were in Douglas's shoes, I'd want to have him signed to an extension before the deadline or trade him to the highest bidder. I would have to think that Douglas has been in discussions with Marcus May's agent and has a good idea of what it will take to extend or re-sign him in the offseason. So my questions are, one, do you agree with what I stated above? And if so, what draft capital in return would make you happy in a Williams trade? And what number would you be willing to pay May on a contract extension? So Luke with a number of questions here. Do I agree with Luke's theory? And Luke's theory is that for Quinnen Williams, it depends on what kind of trade you get in return. And Marcus May, it depends on whether or not you resign him. You either resign him before the deadline or you trade him. And I think I almost entirely agree. I talked about this a little bit on yesterday's show. For Quinnen Williams, it would take like a package similar to Jamal Adams for me. Unless, and this is probably the one area where I may disagree with Luke a little bit, unless you've looked at him from day to day, because the Jets have more knowledge on Quinnen Williams' true potential than anybody else, and you've evaluated this, and you said, you know what, based on what I'm seeing in practice, based on the way this guy's developing, I don't think he's ever going to be a superstar. I don't think he's ever going to make good on his potential. And if that's the case, then I think you trade him before the rest of the league figures that out. You know, you look at the teams that have done that in recent years. I think about the Cardinals trading Josh Rosen to Miami. I think about, if you go back a little bit further, the Browns trading Trent Richardson to the Colts. Those were situations where the team realized the player just was not going to reach his potential, and they got more value for the player because they traded him early. And yeah, you get some grief from the fans and the media saying you're giving up on the guy, but if you realize that he's not good enough, get what value you can for the player. So I think that that's the one exception I'd make. Other than that, I agree. I think with May, it has to be either an extension or a trade. With Quinnen Williams, I think it's, you know, if you get a Jamal Adams type package, because Williams still has big fans in front offices because he was the third overall pick in 2019, then yeah, you deal him. And if you think that you cannot get a package in return, or if you don't think he's good enough, if he's going to reach his true potential, even if you have to take a package that looks less than stellar on paper, I think you consider it. Now, I think there's one other complication with May, and that's simply that we are probably going to have a coaching change, and that makes it a little bit more difficult because that means a new defensive system. So are you re-signing May? And if you are, is he going to have a role in the new system? Is the new defensive coordinator going to want a safety like May? My hunch would be yes, because May is versatile enough that he should fit into most systems. I don't think you have this issue with Quinnen Williams, because ideally Quinnen Williams is going to develop into a dominant, you know, disruptive defensive lineman. That's something you need in every system. So ultimately, what would I be happy with in a Williams trade? This is the second part of Luke's question. Well, I think if you believe, and again, this comes down to what the Jets believe. If the Jets still believe he's going to be a superstar level player, and there's some evidence to suggest maybe he's on that path, then it would take a Jamal Adams type trade, where it's just too good of an offer to turn down. If I don't believe that, then maybe you just take what you can get. Maybe if somebody offers you a second round pick. Again, this question diverges based on how the Jets truly view Williams. As far as May, you know, it's tough to judge this because, you know, we don't know what the cap's going to be next year. I'd say, I don't know, maybe a deal $7, $8 million a year. And again, like, there's a little bit of a gamble on May because is the new defensive coordinator, whoever's running the defense, going to want a player like May in his system? Again, I think that he's versatile enough that he's going to be able to fit any scheme. So I probably would do it if you could get him for that. But I think the other question is, do you envision Ashton Davis taking over May's role? Because May becomes significantly less valuable then. And May's not going to bring back much in a trade because you're essentially trading him as a rental. And he doesn't play a premium position, and he's a solid player, but he's not a great player. So, I mean, I think we're talking a late-round pick for May. So I think that's another thing you have to consider. But I think ultimately I do agree with the idea that you either extend him or you trade him. Look what happened last year with Robbie Anderson. Jets lost him for nothing. Now he's going out there playing great with Carolina, and I think a strong case to be made the Jets probably should have re-signed him, especially considering that Carolina did not give him a big contract. I mean, I've never been the biggest Robbie Anderson fan in the world, but I do remember saying that at $10 million, I'd re-sign him. So I'll give myself, don't give me too much credit because I didn't think he was going to have a season like this, but I'll take a little bit of credit because I did say at $10 million, I would re-sign him. Don't let that happen again, because the Jets at least could have gotten something for him at the trade deadline last year. I think that was a mistake, and I don't think they should make the same mistake with Marcus May. Our next question comes from Andrew. I saw this comment heavily downvoted on the Jets Reddit page, but I still wanted to pass it along to you. What does it say for a GM who took a 7-win team and turned it into a 1-2-win team? Still too soon to make judgments on pick/roster moves, but bringing back the staff, if he has that control that has been so detrimental to winning and development, might need to count as a mark against Joe Douglas. So the statement is, what does it say about a GM that took a 7-win team and turned it into a 1 or 2-win team? And it's being downvoted on Reddit, and I hesitate to say this because I don't know if the guy who wrote that is a listener, and I don't want to say anything bad about my listeners, but that's a comment that probably deserves to be downvoted because it's one of those things that's technically true, but in context really does not paint an accurate picture of what's going on with the Jets. Because when you say Joe Douglas took a 7-win team, you're implying that the Jets were, when you say 7-win team, you're implying that the Jets were kind of like a middle of the pack league average team last year. And that is not, that was a really bad football team last year. That was the team that was out of the playoff race in October, just like they were this year. The first 8 games of last year, the Jets looked every bit as bad as they do right now. That's something that's easy to forget. You know, you look at that 7-9 record, the first half of last year, they were just as terrible as they are this year. So, and then what happened in the second half? Well, the Jets got a lot of easy opponents. Jets played a bunch of bottom five teams. And by the way, they still lost to the 0-7 Dolphins. They still lost to the 0-11 Bengals. I mean, they had horrible losses last year. And yeah, they caught a couple breaks. Jamal Adams took over the game against the Giants. They played Washington, who was just a total disaster when they played them. They got a game against Buffalo's backups. They won a game against Miami, essentially because of a shaky pass interference call. So that was not, you could say they were a 7-win team last year, but that they did not have the fundamentals of a 7-win team. That was a bad team that was very, very lucky to win 7 games. And the moves that were made this offseason, you know, they traded Jamal Adams, which is, you know, that's probably the biggest move that was made. And that was always going to be a move that hurts you in the short run. We'll see what he does with the draft picks. The only thing I think you could really get on him for right now is what I talked about with Robbie Anderson. That looks bad. There's no question that looks bad, replacing Anderson with Perryman. And look, again, like I was okay with it at the time. But that, let's be honest, it's about results. And the results of that do not look very good right now for the New York Jets. But ultimately, you know, Joe Douglas is not going to be judged on the moves that he made, the bunch of one-year contracts. The question for him is he going to be able to draft effectively? Is he going to be able to add cornerstone players? And that's not something we'll know for 2 to 3 years. And, you know, the last part of the comment, we know that, you know, it's a mark against him if he was responsible for bringing back Adam Gase. Well, he's not. That was Chris Johnson's call. Chris Johnson was quite clear about that. That's his call. So that's not something you can really get on Joe Douglas about. You know, there will be a time where we can criticize Joe Douglas, where we can really say Joe Douglas, we can either say Joe Douglas is good at his job or Joe Douglas is really bad at his job. I'm sorry, there'll be a time you can criticize him now, but we don't know whether or not he's actually good at the job or bad at the job, because GMs are not judged based on 1 year. They're judged over the long run. And 1 year, really, this was really his first offseason because he came in too late last year. He's had 1 year, and he was kind of limited because of the cap situation. This is going to be the first real opportunity he's going to have to totally overhaul this roster this coming offseason. Then we'll see how good he is. Just as Joe Douglas will look to fix the Jets this offseason, if you need to fix your car, go to rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. RockAuto.com's prices are reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, RockAuto.com. Locked On Jets podcast here on this Mailbag Wednesday. Our next question: a lot of people are speculating that Trevor Lawrence could pull a Peyton Manning and return to Clemson just to avoid the Jets. I don't think this makes any sense. Lawrence would be risking millions of dollars, and he'd likely end up going to a bad team anyway. Curious to hear your thoughts. Well, when I analyze anything in the NFL, the first thing that I do is I look at what's happened in the past, and I try and find similar situations. You know, if you trade a fifth-round pick for a corner who has not had success, for a young corner who's still developing, when have teams in the past done that, and how has it worked out? If you trade down in the first round and pick up an extra second-round pick and you acquire a future first-round pick, how's it worked out for teams that have done that? Now, there are always going to be exceptions, and you can never make definitive statements, but frequently when you ask me a question and I analyze it, that's what I look at. I look at the past. I see, how has this worked out in the past? Because there tends to, if you look at this, if you study the league enough, you notice that certain trends develop, and there are reasons that things keep happening over and over again. I remember last year I got into a debate with somebody. Jets started 0-3, and I pointed out that 0-3 teams barely make the playoffs, and this person said, well, those teams all had different circumstances. And I said, that's exactly the point. These teams were all different in every way. They only had two things in common. They were 0-3, and most of them missed the playoffs. That shows you something. It shows you when there are only a handful of things in common. Teams at 0-3, there's a reason they don't make the playoffs. So what's my point here is that I look throughout NFL history, recent NFL history. There are really only two examples of players going back after they would have been the obvious number one overall pick. Peyton Manning in 1997 and Andrew Luck in 2011. I agree. And the reason for that is that, as you said, it doesn't make a lot of sense because Trevor Lawrence is not going to go to a good team. He's going to go to a team that needs a quarterback and is terrible in part because they need a quarterback. So why would Trevor Lawrence pass up on that? It doesn't really make a lot of sense. I don't see it happening. And, you know, again, history doesn't, anything's possible. Again, there are exceptions. Peyton Manning was an exception. If you were asking me in 2011, will Andrew Luck come out? I probably would have said yeah, because I'm looking at this. There are exceptions, but those are the only two that really come to mind of players who were absolutely slam dunks to be the number one overall pick but went back to school. And there's a reason for that. Andrew Luck's passing up money. He's essentially delaying his potential to earn a lot of money because that pushes back the expiration of his rookie contract. Players really make their money on their second contract in this league. And instead of Trevor Lawrence's rookie contract running out in 2025, it will now run out in 2026 if he stays another year. So you're putting off your earning power. You're essentially costing yourself a year of big earnings. It doesn't make any sense. And what are you getting out of it? The Jets may be so bad next year that they get the number one overall pick anyway. So anything's possible, but it would be, and there are exceptions, but I don't really see the scenario being very likely. Our next question, John: by not firing Gase now, are we falling behind other teams in the head coaching search process? Do you think the Jets would be reaching out to other coaches at this point, or do they have to wait until Gase is fired? Is there a chance we lose out on premium candidates because Gase is still around? I think in practical terms,
it doesn't make a big difference, to be honest with you. There have been plenty of reports that the Jets were putting together their coaching search while Todd Bowles was still employed by them. There's nothing that prevents them from putting together a coaching search and doing some preliminary work. I mean, the thing you have to remember is when it comes to NFL coaches, assistants, anybody who has a job right now really can't interview until the season's over anyway. And the Jets can put together their preliminary lists and all that stuff. So ultimately, it doesn't make a big difference. Really, the only people you could speak to right now are coaches who don't currently have jobs. And I'm struggling to even think of who they would be. I mean, Mike McCarthy was one last year, and he's obviously not doing a great job in Dallas right now. So you could, and you even now you could still talk to them by without if you just try and prevent it from becoming public. Really, the only thing that would happen was it would be reported, and you know it would create another distraction for the team. But ultimately, you know, what difference does that make? The Jets are going to lose every week anyway. So as long as Gase is fired, even if it's the day after the season, I don't think it makes that big of a difference. I mean, I would probably fire him the day the Jets were eliminated from playoff. But let's be honest, I'd fire him today. But I think you fire him at the day the Jets are eliminated from playoff contention, because then you could start at, by that point, the college season will be over. And if you want to speak to college coaches, you could start reaching out to them. But you have to wait till for the college season to be over before you can really reach out to them anyway. So I think at that point it may have a marginal impact if you wait, you know, instead of firing him in like early December and then you could speak to college coaches, you wait till after the year. Maybe you put yourself a little bit behind, you know, you delay it a little bit, but I think in practical terms it does not have a major impact. Next question. If you are Joe Douglas and Jacksonville calls you the night before the draft offering the number 3, number 25, number 35 picks and their 2022 first round pick for the rights to draft Trevor Lawrence, what do you do? I tell them politely, I'm sorry, but we're drafting Trevor Lawrence. And then I'd say, even though I'm not going to make this trade, I want you to at least get something productive out of this call. So I will give you a piece of information that Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. And the improved Built Bar is even more delicious. There are now 18 amazing flavors, 6 new flavors to go with the 12 originals. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Coconut almond has 18 grams protein, 180 calories, 5 grams sugar, 5 grams net carbs, while cookies and cream has 17 grams protein, 130 calories, 4 grams sugar, 4 grams net carbs. And if you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, one word, LOCKEDON, for 20% off at BuiltBar.com, BuiltBar.com. Locked On Jets podcast on this Mailbag Wednesday. Our next question. The search for a new head coach will be the focus of the Jets front office sooner or later. My concern is that a hot offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator will be hired who has built a system on one side of the ball but does not have what it takes to run the entire show. So I've taken more of an interest in the character traits that make NFL head coaches successful. What traits do you think are most essential, and do you see any candidates who check all the boxes? You know, that's one of the things I've kind of given up on, is trying to have definitive opinions on head coaches or first-time head coaches. I mean, I could have told you, and I did tell you, that Adam Gase was a bad idea because we had seen him fail as a head coach in Miami. But I think you hit on an important point, is we're always looking for the hot coordinator. And the traits that make you a good coordinator are so different from the traits that make you a good head coach. A coordinator, you are focused on one side of the ball. Head coach, you have to be able to see the big picture. You are responsible for every aspect of the team. You're responsible for having a good offensive system. You're responsible for having a good defensive system. And you need what they call complementary football. You need to make sure that the offensive game plan each week supports what you need to get out of the defense. You know, for example, when you're going up against the Kansas City Chiefs, the best game plan for playing the Chiefs is not necessarily the game plan that's going to score you the most points on offense. It's keeping the ball away from the Kansas City offense, playing ball control, keeping Mahomes on the sideline. That may not be so. If your team's playing complementary football, that's what you'll look for in your offensive game plan. Whereas if you have like the offense and defense as two distinct units, you'll put together an offensive game plan that essentially tries to outscore the Chiefs, which is not going to be very successful. So I think more than anything for me, it's the ability to find a good coaching staff and the ability to delegate. I mean, I think that's one of the things that really set Bill Parcells apart as a head coach. I mean, you look at some of the names that were on his coaching staff: Tom Coughlin, Sean Payton, Bill Belichick. I mean, I could go on. There were so many successful coaches. And there were lots of head coaches on the Parcells, guys who eventually got head coaching jobs on the Parcells staff who failed as head coaches. But the reason you get a job as a head coach is because you're a good assistant. I always argue with this with my father. My father never, like, accepted Bill Parcells because he always thought he was a Giants coach. Even when Parcells was coaching the Jets, he always kind of viewed him with skepticism because he viewed Parcells as a Giants coach. And one of the things my father always says, well, he never won anything without Belichick as his defensive coordinator. And I say to my father, like, it's like you're holding it against him that he was smart enough to hire the greatest coach of all time as his defensive coordinator. It's really important to be able to hire good people who work together and be able to delegate, be able to see the big picture, be able to command a locker room. And these are very, very vague terms, but these are the things that are really important. It's not about bringing in a great offensive system. You need a good offensive system, but yeah, if you have offensive expertise like a Sean Payton, then fine. You can be hands-on with the offense. You can be focused more on one side of the ball than the other, but you are responsible for the entire football team. Just because you come in with an offensive background, doesn't mean at all that you are not accountable for the defensive side. You're accountable for the whole football team. So, you know, it's tough to say. I mean, it's tough to say without, you know, if we're talking about first time coaches. I'm still kind of figuring out how I feel about these candidates. So I think that'll be a good, I'll try and answer that later on once we get closer to the interview process, once Adam Gase is no longer the coach. Next question. I know it's early, but curious. I am okay selecting Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields if they're available with the top three pick. However, I don't think I want to trade the other first or second rounder to get up and get him. What are your thoughts? Would you be okay with the Jets trading a top pick to get the first pick if they fall out of that position? I think there's a time and a place to look to trade up. And when you're talking about a quarterback, that is the time and the place. So I would not have a problem with it. And here's the thing about the Jets right now. The Jets are going to be able to get wherever they want to move in the draft because they have an extra third-round pick this year. They have four first-round picks in the next two drafts. So they have the currency to move wherever they want to in this draft. And, you know, you may get into a situation where Jacksonville gets the number one overall pick and nothing you could give them would get them to pass on Lawrence or trade down. But I would not have a problem with it. And here's the thing you have to remember. This would be different than trading three second-round picks for Sam Darnold because the Jets have an excess of draft capital right now, which means that they can still trade up and have a normal allotment of draft picks. They're not making themselves poor in draft capital. They still have a reasonable amount. They'll still be able to make a reasonable amount of picks to have a full draft class, even if they do trade them. Not my ideal scenario. I'd like to see the Jets be able to, well, first of all, I'd like to see Sam Darnold go out and play great the last 9 weeks and allow the Jets to trade down. But if that's not going to happen, if the Jets are in position to take a quarterback, ideally they'd be in a position to get their guy without trading up. Ultimately, though, I think quarterback's just a position you don't mess around with. So that might be the one situation where I don't have a problem with the trade-up. Next question. What do you think of Chuma Edoga? Last I checked, PFF graded him as the top offensive lineman, slightly ahead of Becton. Is he the long-term answer at right tackle? It would be nice to know we are set at both tackle spots for the foreseeable future. I think he's been okay. I want to see how he plays the rest of the year, though. I think it's too early to declare Edoga's the future at right tackle. I think a few games is a small sample size. He does look better this year, and I have been kind of encouraged by what I've seen from him, but I need to see more. Next question. If Joe Douglas knew that 2019 and 2020 were going to be transitional, if not complete rebuilding year, should he have been more patient with Ja'Kai Polite? With the team this bad, what was the harm in putting him on the practice squad and seeing if Polite could mature as a person and improve as a player? I just think they concluded that he was not worth the pick. I mean, you have to remember that he was off a lot of teams' draft boards. And here's the other thing you got to remember. The guy who probably took his spot was Kyle Phillips, who at this point has been a more successful pro than Ja'Kai Polite. So at this point, I think what it was they prioritized the guy who was better. Yeah, I guess you could have put Polite on the practice squad, but I think they also wanted to send a message that, you know, just because you're a third-round pick doesn't mean you're guaranteed a roster spot. I don't have a problem with cutting a guy who's got an attitude problem and, you know, showing that it doesn't matter who you are. You're not going to last here if you don't show up and work hard. So I don't have a big problem with that. And our last question, isn't the question about whether or not to stick with Sam Darnold beyond this year, not so much a question of his play as it is a question of the cost. Given the whole team's bad play in 2020, there's little chance the Jets can make the playoffs in 2021, which is Sam's last cheap contract year. So with Sam's advantage played out, he's no longer a low-cost quarterback around which Joe Douglas can spend money on other players to build the team around. Given the time that is still required to rebuild, doesn't Joe have to go with Lawrence, Fields, or Lance just as a matter of team building slash cap economics? Well, it's kind of the question, because there are kind of two different approaches. The first approach would be to go that way and draft a new quarterback, then you have a lot of cap space to build around him. The second approach, however, would be if Darnold played well enough, you could extend him. And at that point, you would not have as much cap space, but you'd also have this high draft pick. You'd have four first-round picks in the next 2 years, and you'd also be able to trade down. And then, so you may not have the cap space, but you'd have more draft capital, because you would not need to use that pick on a quarterback. You might be able to trade down and get even more draft picks and really build around Darnold with cheap talent. So I do think it ultimately does come down to Darnold, the quality of Darnold's play. It's better to have the young quarterback on a cheap deal, but you can win with a quarterback on a second contract. And if you have a guy who's good enough to get a second contract, I don't know that I would want to roll the dice on an unknown rookie quarterback. I don't know that the risk reward is there. If you have a guy you know is good, to roll the dice on somebody younger and less accomplished and less of a sure thing, I think it does come down to Darnold's play. That's just my read on the situation, though. That's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy our show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. I hope you have a great Wednesday, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with Crossover Thursday, as we'll have a crossover episode between Locked On Jets and Locked On Chiefs ahead of this Week 8 game.